In sharp contrast to his relaxed persona at the press conference, Zeeble, now irritated, paced back and forth in the plush private office his staff had reserved for him on the 89th floor of One World Trade Center. Unlike an hour ago when he stood on the observatory level gazing at the city below, he paid no attention to the panoramic view outside the floor-to-ceiling windows. Instead, his attention zeroed in like the scope of a sniper's rifle on the figure prostrated before him on one knee, his secret angel who had been summoned to report on his latest assignment, the destruction of the band Deliver Us, whose spiritual impact around the world last year had thwarted his progress.
"What do you mean they are in the studio again?" Zeeble growled. "Project C-682, Charlie Austin, is in the Deliver Us studio in Nashville, recording songs for a new album," said Fobley, working hard to maintain a tone of calm confidence. "But you told me that wretched band had been broken. You, yourself, saw to it that its leader would never play music again."
"That is correct, sir. Jerry Levine's hearing and hands were damaged, I'm proud to say. As a result, the aging members decided to retire and shut down the band,"
Fobley said.
"If what you say is true, how is it that C-682 is recording another song as Deliver Us? Last year I saw to it that he was fired from that irksome band."
Fobley swallowed hard before replying.
"Sir, C-682 was, forgiven and invited to rejoin the band."
"Stop talking in circles, Fobley. I don't have all day. Does Deliver Us exist or not?"
"I have been monitoring C-682 since he arrived in Nashville last month. I have learned that Jerry Levine invited him to reform the band under his leadership,"
Fobley said.
"After what that brat did to the band's reputation during their European tour, nonsense. No one would let that problem child back. Your information is wrong, Fobley. Are you forgetting that it was a plan last year under my direction that removed C-682, damaged Deliver Us's reputation, and stole away Levine's ability to perform ever again? Are you suggesting my plan was flawed?"
Fobley, still on one knee, flinched and hoped the leader hadn't noticed the involuntary twitch. Fobley proudly knew that it had been his own actions on the 4th of July that had damaged Jerry Levine's hearing and hands, not the leader's plan, but to mention that fact in this heated moment could only lead to being instantly vaporized like a drop of water on a hot skillet. He'd let that pass, but what he had to reveal next had the potential of causing a reaction by the leader so severe that the entire structure in which they stood could come crashing down like a game of Jenga.
"Sir, your plan was brilliant, as always. From what I can tell, our adversary may have gotten involved."
To Fobley's surprise, the leader didn't react by throwing objects around the room or destroying the entire building. Instead, there was a brief sensation inside Fobley's head, like a mild shock, just for a millisecond. Then he heard the voice loud and clear again. The leader had switched to a form of telepathic communication with Fobley, secure from eavesdropping, whether by device or human ears.
"The adversary is always involved, as you say. I'm surprised to hear such a weak excuse for failure coming from a newly appointed secret angel. Are you tired of your assignment, Fobley? Do you long for the sea air and mud of Unalaska?"